All right, good morning.
You
can have a seat. FYI, we are having a little bit of troubles with the Facebook Live, so we got Doug up here on the front row holding his phone up, recording a video. So thank you, Doug, for doing that. I will spare your thumb, and we will keep this short, so that way your finger will not get carpal tunnel or anything, and then we have to, you know, worry about that. So we'll keep it short. But anyway, we've been walking through a sermon series these last couple of weeks, love God, love your neighbor. And really at the foundation of that was we cannot truly actually love our neighbors if we first don't have the love of God inside of us. If the love of God is not inside of us, then it's not living out through us. We can't display it to other people. People don't see a difference in the kind of love. We can do our good deeds. Yes, we can do our good deeds, but what's the motivation behind our good deeds? That we do. And so, of course, our motivation for doing the good deeds is because we love God, therefore we love our neighbor. And so that's what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, and it's been a great study for us. But this week, I want us to kind of not just zoom in on our neighbor, but I want us to actually zoom out and then kind of get a 30-foot view of a city. Because in reality, of course, we all live inside of some sort of city limits or in a city. We all call it Tucson home or Sierra Vista. Wherever it is that you're living, you are calling that place your home, right? That's your home. You've bought a house. You've purchased it. You are now living within those boundaries of that city. So that city is our home. And we're going to kind of look at what it means to love our city, what it means to love our city. And really, that kind of, for us, is, man, I don't know if I really want to love a city, thinking of all the bad that goes on, especially in Tucson, when you think that only about 3 to 5% of people actually even know Christ. So you're talking that we're living in a predominantly non-Christian city here in Tucson, Arizona. When you think about it, you're like, man, I'd rather actually go live where it's like, you know, in Texas, where everybody knows about church, or, you know, in my old city that I used to live in Snyder, Texas, it was just a small town of 11,000 people, and everybody knew our pastor and then the worship pastor. Like, they knew them by name. The worship pastor actually grew up in that town. So anywhere we would go, they knew Steve. They knew Steve and Stephanie Highfield, and they knew Larry and Janelle McCaden. And they knew those people by name and people that they had grown up with 30 plus years of their lives. And then to come out here to Tucson, Arizona, where you don't know anybody, and then you're like, man, it's kind of scary actually moving out here, where nobody, you don't have any family. We moved as, when I finally told my parents and I said, okay, we're not going to allow family to be the deciding factor of God being able to use us. He says, oh, well, great, I'm going to move you across country. My parents live in South Carolina, and we live in Arizona. So it's literally cross country. And just to be able to drive, you're talking about 30 hours, 2 days, and believe it or not, we've done it. And so we said, okay, we're going to move out here to Tucson, Arizona, not even thinking of, man, this is just, it's just a dark city, a city that needs the love of Christ, very, very much so. And so we're going to be looking at what it means to actually love our city. And we're going to be in Jeremiah chapter 29. Some of you are probably familiar with that passage. But basically, this is it's just a letter that Jeremiah is writing to some people. But just before we actually dive into that passage, I want to give you some historical background because it's going to help us to realize, okay, this is why Jeremiah is actually writing this letter to these people. And so in the beginning of their, I guess their nation, you had the forefather Abraham. He gave birth to Isaac. Then Isaac gave birth to Jacob, and then Jacob gave birth to 12 sons. I'm not gonna name them off because I don't know them, but he gave birth to 12 sons, and then those sons became the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob's name was then changed from Jacob to Israel, and those 12 sons were the 12 tribes of Israel as what we know in the Bible. And so they ended up going to Egypt, and they were in Egypt for about 400 years under in slavery, and they were there for 400 years. So at the end of that, we hear God sends this guy Moses, right? God sends a guy, Moses. We all probably know about Moses and what he did, but he goes and he sets the people free. The Hebrews is what they were called back in that day. They set the Hebrews free from the control or the rule of the Egyptians as in slavery. And so now they are in the wilderness. They end up being in the wilderness for 40 years because of their sin. Then they are able to walk into the promised land that God had promised to them back in Abraham. And they actually get into the promised land, but before they can actually completely inherit it and call themselves a nation, what they had to do is they had to weed out and they had to conquer all of those colonies, cities that were living in that promised land that was their land. And they had to get rid of them before they finally did, and then now they're actually a nation of their own. Hundreds of years later has passed, they now have kings. And the first three kings that we read of in the Bible are King Saul, King David, and then King Solomon. And at the end of King Solomon's reign in about 930 BC, the nation of Israel is actually split up into two parts. You had the northern kingdom, and then you had the southern kingdom. And then each one of those had their own kings. But for hundreds of years, they were fighting against each other, the northern and the southern. You could almost call it basically like a civil war kind of thing. They were going at it. One of them just wanted to conquer the other. But about that time, the Assyrian Empire was gaining strength, and they were conquering more lands, and they eventually conquered the northern land in about 722 BC. And after that, they had conquered that land, and they said, okay, we're not going to stop there with just the northern kingdom. Now we're going to go and try to conquer the southern kingdom. And they tried to knock them out, to conquer them, and take control of the southern kingdom, but they're unsuccessful. They can't really do that. And so about the year maybe 540 to about 585 BC, the Assyrian Empire is actually losing a lot of its power. They don't have the power that they used to. And so what that was for the southern kingdom was that actually meant some really good stuff. They didn't have these constant battles of people surrounding them trying to, you know, starve them to death. They didn't have those problems. It was a prosperous time for them as a nation. In the southern kingdom, it was a proper time for them. They were in peace. It was great for them. It was a good time for them. But not knowing that Jeremiah, and who we come to now, he had been prophesying for about 40 years that there is going to be judgment that's going to come. There's going to be judgments that's going to be coming. And the people are like, really? Judgment coming? Are you sure? And then he had these false prophets that were actually saying, no, don't listen to Jeremiah. Things are going to be great. We're going to be a prosperous nation. It's going to be like this for a long, long time. That's what the false prophets were saying. But Jeremiah is like, no, there is judgment coming. So the people were hearing two messages, one of blessing and one of judgment. I mean, which one would we want to hear? We would want to hear the one of blessing, right? I mean, yeah, we would want to stick to, and we would accept and believe that one. And so did the nation of Israel. They believed the one that it was all about the blessing, but of course, it was the false prophets. And so years pass, and then in 586 BC, the Babylonian Empire now goes in and conquers Jerusalem, the southern kingdom. They conquer it. They destroy the temple, which was a sacred place for them. They destroy the temple. And because of the aftermath of that, now they have millions of people that are scattered throughout the known empire. People in so many different cities and areas, people that they had picked up their livelihood and they had to be moved over to these different areas in a place of exile. And so Jeremiah, what we're going to be reading about right now is a letter to those people who are basically scattered throughout the whole known, the Babylonian Empire, scattered throughout. And he's writing a letter to them, and we're going to be in verses 5 through 7. We can go ahead and read that. If you don't have a Bible, there's one at the end of your rows, and then it's also going to be up on the screen for you as well. But this is what Jeremiah says to these people. He says, build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters, multiply there, and do not decrease. Verse number 7, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray for the Lord on its behalf. So we see that he's giving them some instructions, if you will. He's saying, build for yourselves houses and plant gardens. And we think, well, yeah, of course. Are they just going to be homeless? I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer right there, right? But really, for these people, it was almost like it was something countercultural for them. They usually kind of tend to stick around their family, lived close by to where they grew up. I mean, they didn't have the transportation, the ease of transportation like we do now to say, oh, we're going to move across country. Okay, let's go get a truck from Penske, and then we'll be there in 2 days. Like, it did not happen that way. And so if somebody actually did do that, they had to be very intentional of, okay, we're going to move over this way. It was a long and hard and difficult process for them to be able to do that. So they tended to stick close to family. They were close-knit. It was a small community of people, and they stuck together. And so for them, it was like, for them being told, build yourselves houses and homes, it was kind of like, wait. You want us to build houses and homes out here? When our home, if you will, our place of origin, the place where we grew up and spent most of our life, my birthplace, you want me to build a home and call this place home? It didn't make any sense to them. It's countercultural to them. But Jeremiah is like, build yourselves houses and homes to live in it. Call this place your home. Make this place of exile your home. Don't just sit back and say, okay, well, it's only a temporary thing. Like, you know, maybe give it like 40 years, I don't know. But just give it a while and we'll be back in Jerusalem where we were. And then we can go back to our nice mansion or our nice house with the pool in the backyard. Like, let's just wait until we get there. But until then, let's just make do with what we got. He's saying, no. I want you to build houses. Make this place of exile your home. And don't just build the houses. He's like, plant gardens. Find some source of livelihood. Build yourself a business. Create, like, get your roots down deep. He's like, make this place your home. I know it's not the place of origin. You probably can't even communicate with anybody, but make it your home. Make it your home. And so Jeremiah is talking to them, do that. You know, I talk to people all the time, and I ask them, okay, how do you like Tucson? And you'd be surprised how many times I've heard people say, I hate it, and I want to get out of here. I'm like, really? Tucson? Like, what's not to like about Tucson? Right? Highways, okay? That's the one thing not to like about it. I wish they would have a whole lot more highways, but man alive, it's just a great city. When you think of where we came from in Snyder, Texas. Now, please, what I'm going to say here does not leave this room, okay? I love Snyder, Texas. It was great for us to take a break from a big city. It was 11,000 people is all that lived. I could be from the north end of town to the south end of town in 5 minutes. I think there were probably maybe 5 stoplights in the whole city. For me, that was great. I was like, shoot, yeah, I'll see you there in 5 minutes. Now I'm like, okay, give me an hour and a half and I'll be there. But it was a great city, but the best thing that we had going for us was a Supercenter Walmart. And I would talk to people, I was like, man, do you like it here? Like, I actually liked it, right? I liked it because I was like, it's a break for me from a big city. I liked it and I enjoyed it. And the people would say, no, I hate it. I want to get out. I was like, okay, well, you know, you got to drive an hour and a half to get to the nearest mall or do any kind of shopping, so I get it, you know. And the only thing that we have to offer here in Snyder, Texas is, you know, an Anytime Fitness with a Caesar's Pizza right next to it. So you work out and then you go right next door, grab your pizza and go home. Like, there wasn't really much to be able to offer, but I'm like, Tucson? Really? That's just an awesome city. And I'm sure that's probably what the people were thinking at that point. The Israelites, they were just saying, it was like, I hate it. I just want to get back. I just want to get back. I just want to get back. I don't want to be here. There's no family. There's no family nearby. It's horrible. The people don't even speak my language. They can't even relate. And you're wanting me to build a house and make it my home. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm wanting you to do. And verse 6, he doesn't even stop there. And he says, I want you to not only build yourselves houses, but I want you to carry on with life. I want you to carry on with life. We think in the Western culture of arranged marriage is you're like, oh, you're one of those people. Arranged marriage. My mom thought she would be able to arrange me and get me married off to the right person, and I'm glad she didn't. But that's how their culture was. They had these arranged marriages. And he's saying to them, I want you to carry on with life. I want you to marry off your daughters to other Jewish people who are in this land with you. They may not be your family, but I want you to marry them off. And he says, I don't want you to just marry them. I want you to be able to encourage them, and I want them to procreate. And he says, at the end of that verse, he says, and do not decrease. I mean, if they're decreasing in number, I mean, that makes the fight more difficult, right? I mean, if we were to say that every single one of the churches in Tucson, Arizona would close their doors except for us, how hard would that be for us to be able to reach the city? It'd be impossible. It'd be impossible for us to reach the city. But he's saying, I want you to carry on with life. I want you to marry your daughters. I want you to marry your sons. I want you to just continue to procreate and grow as a family. Grow as a nation. Again, I know it's not your place of home. You're not your place of origin. But I want you to continue to grow. And in verse 7 is where we're going to kind of camp out a little bit more this morning. He says, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray for the Lord on its behalf. For in its welfare you will find welfare. See, for us is, let's pursue the welfare of the city that we're in. Let's pursue the welfare of the city that we're in. You know, going back to those differences of Tucson and Snyder, it's when we started to realize before we ended up moving out here, we said, okay, there's God placed us here for a reason. What's the reason? And of course it was to reach the lost. And at that point I said, man, I just want people to come to my church. I don't want to go out there and reach them. And in fact, I don't even want to help out. I'd kind of sit back and I'd cross my arms and I was like, all right, I'm just going to do my job as a youth pastor and just have that title and work at one of the largest churches in that city. And I was good. I was good. I didn't even have any kind of friends that weren't believers, that didn't know Christ. I wouldn't make it a priority to go out and try to meet people and say, hey, man, come to my church. I would love to invite you. I wasn't doing that. I was like, man, I'm just going to leave that up to the other churches and the pastor. Since he knows everybody, I don't know anybody, so I'm just going to wait a couple years until I actually get to know people. And unfortunately, it was before we had gone, we had said, okay, there's something needs to change. We need to start doing something. And so Jennifer and I took it out upon ourselves, and we said, all right, well, where are we going to go serve? And we thought, let's go serve the Boys and Girls Club. Let's go serve the Boys and Girls Club and just go serve there. We built a great relationship with the people there. We would come every week and serve one day out of the week. The first time that we went there, I had kids climbing all over me, and I was like, I do not want to do this again. But we went back the next week, and I worked in the crafts, and it was great. And we just saw how those kids just loved on us, and we were able to love on them, and it was just like be able to do some crafty stuff with them. And I thought, wow, okay, I'm actually starting to kind of engage my city a little bit. I'm starting to kind of engage them. And then unfortunately, we moved out here. Well, not unfortunately, we moved out here to Tucson, Arizona. And now we're in a city that is in desperate need of churches. You see, seeking the welfare of the city isn't something that we think, oh, well, that's for those people. And I understand that we have people that have moved out here for work purposes, also even the military. And I know that there's a lot of transfers. But I just want to encourage you this morning that it doesn't matter if this place is not your home. Can I just challenge and encourage you to continue to look at the city in a way that God wants you to look at the city? I mean, for us, we can think, man, you know what? I'll just leave it up to the people who have been here for a while that have relationships. And just leave it up to them to be able to do it. And I'll just sit back here and I'll come warm up a seat on a Sunday morning. I'm talking to the whole church people. That we just come and we just say, hey, I'm just going to sit here and enjoy the good speaking and the good times that I have with people. And I'm going to go home and then go about my regular routine. Dismissing the fact that even you, who was placed here by design from God, God brought you to this place. We think, oh, well, it's the job that brought me here. Well, God was the one who got you that job to be able to move out here. He was the one that placed the calling on your heart to come out as a church planner out here. He's the one that opened up that opportunity for you to be transferred out this way. It's not a sheer coincidence that we're here and where we are. It's by design. God placed us here. And he says it perfectly in verse number 7. He says, where I have sent you into exile. They were in exile. Thank God we're not in exile. Although it feels that way sometimes with the heat, but we're not in exile. But he is the one who sent us out here because he knew that your skill sets, your strengths, your weaknesses, your talents would be able to do something here in this city that would be able to change and turn this city upside down for Christ. He placed those talents and abilities in your life. And he's just waiting. He said, I want to use you to the best of your abilities. I want to use you to impact the city for Christ. I want you to begin to love this city. I want you to love those people. Because when they see your love, then they're going to begin to see God's love through you. You see, the way that we can begin to love our community and love our city is by embracing strong facts, and as a church, we have this, and we've heard Jeff say it hundreds of times, and I'll say it 101 times, that we are not a city, just a city in or church in the city. We are a church for the city. We want to be a church that reaches out to the lost people. And like I said before, we're 93% unchurched in the city. 93%. And we want to be able to see those numbers flipped upside down, that it's 93% of the people in this city are believers. I believe that's God's desire for this city. It's going to take a lot of work, yeah. It's going to take all of us pitching in our part, loving the city. But the truth of the fact is that we can love our city not because of all that it has to offer us, but what we have to offer it. What we can offer the city. Too often we just sit back and it's just like, man, what is in it for me? Man, this is not where I wanted to be. This is not where I wanted to make home. This is not where I wanted it to be. But the only way that we can actually truly begin to love our city, and I promise you that we will begin to love our city, is when we start to look at it as not of, man, what does this city have for me? Where's the best shopping? Where's the most fun that I can have? Just go to Topgolf. But where's the most fun that I can have in this city? What's in it for me? Is it fun? Where's the younger community to kind of help me feel young? And we think, oh, like, what's in it for me? But when we change our mentality and we say, okay, God, you have me here for a purpose. Why do you have me here? And how can I impact my city? When we start to say, well, it's all in it for me, we undervalue ourselves, we devalue ourselves and the talents that God has given to us, and we refuse to go out and actually serve the city. We cross our arms and, all right, I'm just going to hang out here in my house where it's 109 degrees and it's actually nice and cool inside my house, garage door shut. Nobody's coming up to my door. Yeah, it's comfortable. It's comfortable. Or are you thinking, God, these people right across my street need somebody to pull their weeds. Man, just go pull your weeds. I know it's 110 degrees outside, just go pull the weeds. Maybe the person next door is having car trouble. Man, here, I got a compressor. Let's fill up your tire. When you begin to see the needs and the hurt of the people, you begin to fall in love with your city. It's counterintuitive. I know. I know it is. You'd think that you'd begin to love your city whenever it has more to offer you. But you really begin to love your city when you see what you can offer it. The people of Israel were so distraught that they were in a completely different area. They didn't want to make this their home. They didn't want to procreate. They didn't want to seek the welfare. But it says when you seek the welfare of the city and pray for its leaders, how many of us don't pray for their leaders? And pray for the city and its welfare. Because when it succeeds, you succeed. And that can be business-wise. I mean, if they're planting gardens, they're selling their produce. And if the city is, the welfare of the city is falling, then nobody's going to be able to buy your produce, so therefore your welfare is falling. But as you're selling your produce and the welfare of the city is actually going up, your welfare is going up. You see, when we love our city, we love our city. I just want to share a quick story with you real quick. It's a personal story of mine, but it kind of opens up to this. When we first moved out here in 2017, I don't know, I almost lost track of time. It feels like 10 years. But when we moved out here, I was like, yeah, I was on fire. I was on fire for God. And then I realized, wow, okay, the people that I'm wanting to reach are not the people that I want to reach. They're not the people I want to reach. I always thought to myself, I was like, God, I've wanted to build an American church. And I put that in quotations, an American church. I'm like, what is an American church, really? Like, that's what I wanted it to be, is an American church. And I began to look at everybody that was living in the Sunnyside School District. Started to do some research, and I said, why did you put me right here in this part of the city where 76% of the 90,000 people that live in the Sunnyside School District are Latin American? It didn't dawn on me. I was like, why are you putting... I was getting frustrated, and I was getting discouraged, and I was like, maybe we need to go up to Dove Mountain where it's like there's more Americanized people. We can actually get our American-style church up there in that area. And it wasn't until one evening I was like, all right, Judah, let's just go for a bike ride. And it was just really all it was. We're just going to go for a bike ride through our community and then a couple of the other ones a little further down. And we're riding along, and out of the two people that I saw, only two of them were Americans. The rest of them were Latin American people. And I'd said, hi, how are you? And just as before I was going to head back, I stopped and I was like, why did you call me out here to do that? Why did you call me out here? And it's almost like God was like standing up there in heaven and just slapping me around. Dude, this is exactly why I want you here. I had grown up in Venezuela, South America. My parents were missionaries. I'm fluent in Spanish. I know the culture of the people. And he's like, that is why I've placed you here. That is why I want you to reach the people of the Sunnyside School District. It's because of that. When I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, you're not kidding. You're not kidding. And now I'm just like, man, I can't see myself anywhere else. That's where I want to be, is in the Sunnyside School District. And if we can begin to love our cities well and love them with the love of Christ, because again, We have everything to offer, and that is Jesus Christ, to this city. We have everything to offer this city. Don't underplay of, man, well, I'm just going to be moved in the next couple of years. I don't even know if my job's going to keep me around. Maybe we're just going to have to move back home with family. Make the most of the opportunities that you have now. You have neighbors. Love your neighbors. But don't just stop there. Love your communities. Love the people that you work with. I know it's hard sometimes, but love the people that you work with. Show them the love of Christ. Begin to show them, this is why I love this city, is because it's broken and it needs the love of God. It needs God's love here. And we can love our city well. So church, I just want to encourage you this morning. If you've crossed your arms and you've said, well, I'm just going to wait until my stint here is over, and then I can go back to where I want to go, and when I get there, then I'll be able to pick up life where I left off. God has placed you here for a reason. He says, I want you to make this your home. I want this to be your home until I move you somewhere else. I want this to be your home. I don't want you to go anywhere else. And until that point, I want you to make the most of every opportunity that you have here now to make a difference. Use your talents and your abilities that I have given you to impact this city. That's God's cry for us. Jeremiah was telling the people, you are in a prime location to be able to bring these people, these Babylonians who have nothing to do. They actually even worship more of Nebuchadnezzar and the leaders and the kings of that time than what they actually even did any kind of idols. And they're saying, you have a prime opportunity to be able to talk to these people that are worshiping these fallible beings when they can be worshiping the one true God. And the Israelites were missing that point because they were like, man, it's not Jerusalem. It's not my home. And until I get back, I'm just going to leave it just as it is. And not get involved, not get plugged in, and not get involved. But church, you are here in this church for a reason. And as I said, we don't want to be a church that's just in the city. We want to be a church that's for the city. And that means being a part of our city engagement. Whether that be doing prayer walks, I think every single one of us can walk, and every single one of us can at least pray. Just getting out there and doing a prayer walk. Saying, man, you know what? I just may not have the best smile on my face, but I just love to shake people's hands. Man, I'm just going to go out there. Maybe you might say, you know what? I don't have very much energy, but I just like to come, but I do like to do stuff. Well, there's a great setup team that we have. And maybe you're just like, man, I just really want to be involved in the families of our communities. Well, there's a great opportunity with our Embrace ministry. Every single ministry that we have points to some sort of city engagement. We want to engage our church into the city and finding ways to be able to get plugged in. Church, let's not write it off and cross our arms and just say, this is not where I wanted to be, and I'm going to wait until I get to where I want to be. But making the most of every opportunity that we have now to impact somebody's life for Christ. That's the power that we have. Let's begin to love our city well by demonstrating what we have to offer. And all that we have to offer is the love of Christ. That's all we have to offer. But it can turn this city upside down. And maybe you're thinking here this morning, you're like, man, I just don't know this whole religion thing, and I've tried to do all my good deeds, and I'm thankful that you're doing your good deeds, and you're trying to do the right thing and helping your neighbors and being passionate and serving them. But what's your motivation? Is your motivation just to be able to hopefully one day stand before God and say, God, man, I served and I helped my old lady across the street carry the groceries into her house. I did that all the time when she went and got groceries. I helped other people. I gave to the community food banks and I gave to local charities. And God's standing there and he's saying, yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. but you never knew me. You never had a relationship with me. And if your motivation is just to be able to hopefully stand before God and Him say, yeah, come on in. If you've never accepted Christ, then He can't let you in. He can't let you in. Because you haven't been bought with the blood of Jesus Christ. You haven't accepted Christ and entered into a relationship with Jesus Christ. And if that's you here this morning, God is willing and He's open and He wants to enter into a relationship with you. He wants to change your motivation of just trying to do these good deeds to help people along. And then hopefully, maybe one day, my good is going to outweigh my bad. But and then He's going to look at you and say, I'm sorry, depart from me. I never knew you. I never knew you because you never knew and accepted my Son, the sacrifice that He did for you. And if you want to accept Christ as your own personal Lord and Savior, please come talk to me afterwards. And I can show you from the Word of God what it means to be saved and have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And then your motivation can be, oh, I just don't have to be good enough. It's my motivation is Christ, serving Him and spreading the love of Jesus Christ to this city who needs it.